Hey, you're listening to Blindsight. Let's go. Mental health isn't something to take lightly. It's time to fight. It's time to thrive. Let's do this.
Welcome to Blindsight. This is Bill Lundgren, your host. And with me, of course, is my co-host, Jonathan Price. And we're talking about something that's going to be very important, but not often talked about, is what we call sex and intimacy. Remember that? and it certainly is a very important topic, and particularly for people with disabilities, because it's not talked about that much as an issue for people with disabilities to be taught, to be helped with, I think. And so that's why we're bringing this program. And I'm delighted to have Dr. Corey Allen, our guest today. He is, among other things, he has a radio program called Sexy Marriage, and he's a marriage counselor. He's does a lot of work in helping men with intimacy issues, which men forget that they have to. They have an intimacy issues, frankly. But we're delighted to have you with us, Dr. Allen.
Well, thank you very much. This will be a lot of fun.
So, Dr. Allen, I have been listening to you for the last 8 years, and just your program has been amazing in my life. So I want to thank you right off the top. But when we go into intimacy, this can be a very hard conversation, especially with, you know, like Bill was saying, in the disability community, but even in the community at large, it's not as talked about maybe as much as it should be. And there's a lot of misconceptions around intimacy. Can you kind of talk about the differences between intimacy and sex and why they're so different?
Sure. And I think it's kind of set up a little bit in the way Bill was just talking about it, in the sense that a lot of men don't realize they have an intimacy problem because they think they have a sex problem. And those suckers are different. So intimacy and sex are different, even though they overlap. Because I can be intimate with somebody without being sexual, and I can be sexual with somebody without being intimate. So first off, we have to make a distinction between the two.
Absolutely.
And that's an important factor to add into our equation with our conversation here. Mm-hmm. And I think largely that's kind of what we're trying to navigate towards, right? It's just, let's get a better understanding of what do each of them mean. And I think sex is a little bit easier to define because typically that involves body parts and nudity and rubbing up and down and touching and whatever, you know? So that's kind of pretty clean, but intimacy is a different aspect of our existence in relationships. And that's, I boil it down into the world, to the framework of knowing and being known. And both of them have to exist for intimacy. Because if it's just one way, that's more vulnerability.
Right.
But when it's the other, when it's both ways, that's an intimate connection. And then the only other big distinction to add is intimacy oftentimes is just as likely to produce uncomfortable feelings as it is comfortable ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because when I get to know somebody, I may not like what I get to know. So right. I'll be uncomfortable about that.
Well, and not only that, not only do you essentially get uncomfortable with what you see in that other person, but other people are going to bring out things in you that you may not want to reveal at a particular time.
Excellent point.
You know, when you go through your own intimacy journey and you're trying to know yourself and understand who you are as a person, and somebody brushes up or bumps up against that, you're going to be faced with a very interesting decision to make. How much do I let them in versus how much do I want to keep them at bay until I know them even better?
Right.
It's a how vulnerable,
hard dichotomy there.
How vulnerable do I want to allow myself to be? And it's the vulnerability that is so scary for people.
Absolutely, because I think a vulnerability is, I heard this from an author once, that he equated it to being an author. But when I'm vulnerable with somebody, I'm giving them ammo that they can use against me.
Right.
Is basically what I'm doing. I'm letting them see a part of me that is a little bit deeper or more reserved and maybe not socially acceptable in some ways, or it goes a little more nuanced, and people can use that against me if I allow.
Exactly. And even with one's partner, that scariness in being honest with that person is such a big, you know, hurdle, particularly mm-hmm. early, but even later on when somebody, you know, you reveal something that you haven't let your partner know, and then mm-hmm. you take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you get closer. Yeah,
because what are they going to do with that information? What are they going to do when they see that part of me? Because you can't unring that bell.
That's right, but you can also draw closer.
Once I let them see it or let them know, you know what, what I've always thought about this is, and I fill in the blank, mm-hmm. I'm now faced with, what are they going to do with that? Our relationship is going to change, hopefully for the better, but not always.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes in the disabled community, there's a lot of misconceptions. And really what we do on Blindsight is we want to first eliminate misconceptions about mental health in general. Okay. But even in society, there are so many misconceptions about sex and intimacy. What have you seen as maybe the top one or two things as a misconception that people have about intimacy?
Well, one of the biggest ones is the one I just alluded to earlier, is that I think a lot of times we equate intimacy for a comfort. I'll feel better when I'm intimate, because it's equated to kind of the experience of sex in some ways. It's pleasurable. It feels good. It's connecting. And so if I'm intimate with somebody, I'm going to feel more connected. So how could that be bad? And so one is to realize there's another side of that coin. And that could make, there could be some discomfort that comes along with it. And then the other misconception, I think, is people don't see the other side of the equation of intimacy, meaning I am becoming known myself, like you just alluded to, Jonathan.
Yeah.
That it's not just I know more about you two fellas. It's you guys know more about me is what creates intimacy.
When we define intimacy and sex, and explaining, you kind of alluded to in the beginning that sex is sex, intimacy and intimacy, they overlap. When we have people who are, you mentioned a lot in your show, these power struggles and giving up of one's power versus having power, where do you start to take back your own power or understand what that means in an intimate setting?
Well, so a lot of this then is probably best framed through a lens of identity and solidness, of me knowing who I am, knowing what I want, what I'll stand for, where are my boundaries. I think boundaries is a good concept to add into this equation too, because yes, in the recent episodes of Sexy Marriage Radio, we've been talking a lot about power moves and and just different aspects of committed relationships through that lens. But I think where relationships become the best is when each person encompasses their power fully, and then there's a dynamic that plays out between the two powerful people, if you will.
Yeah.
So, in no way is this a dominating of somebody else, or a subjugating, or demeaning, or taking away from of somebody else. It truly is a give and take while I'm still maintaining myself within it. And that's a huge component, I think, that's true of every population, at least it needs to be.
Holding
on to myself is vital to deep intimacy, because otherwise I'm I get abused, it gets taken advantage of, it gets used against me big time. There's harm, there's trauma. You know, there's a lot of things that can come from that, unfortunately, which is then why I need to constantly be looking at how am I defining me and my own solidness and my own way, autonomy, and the way I'm interacting with those around me.
And you see, one of the issues in terms of disabilities is that so often we're taught either explicitly or implicitly that we're less than. We don't have power.
Right.
And we get, and anybody with a disability has to rely on others and feels that conflict, I should be able to do this, but I can't. Or they're taught by their families, don't even touch the issue of sex because they're going to take advantage. Or, you know, there are all kinds of messages.
Right.
Because their parents are trying to protect them from being hurt and actually are doing hurt. Because they're not telling them, what they need to know to protect themselves or to understand the power dynamics that can go on in caretaking and what I call caretook dynamic. And a caregiver can take advantage. And we don't even know what power we have.
Yeah, and that would be a real big nuance in this conversation. I think that I'm glad you're bringing up, Bill, because it does need to be brought out in the open. Yeah. I think the one thing I have found just working with humans for the last 23 years and having been one for 53 now is the things that we keep in the shadows are the things that wreak the most havoc.
You got it.
Amen.
And if we can bring them out into the open to have a dialogue about them, and particularly a civil one, a respectful one, a curious one.
Yeah.
That's been the running fuel behind Sexy Marriage Radio for the 13 years it's been around is we just want to be honest and open about things that need to be addressed. We're not telling people what they should or shouldn't do very often, if at all, but we want to have the dialogue. And so I think with the disability community or the disabled community and individuals, it's imperative to still treat them as you would anybody else, dignity, respect, capability, because every single one of us are. And it's just recognizing, okay, where do I end based on what I face in my life? Mm-hmm. And then I do need help, support, equipping, whatever. And then how do I, from a dignified, empowered way, receive that, speak towards that, rather than, you guys tell me this. This just comes to my mind since this is what you guys do with your episode and where you focus. I think all of us as humans can reach levels of our lives and aspects of our lives where we have a, for lack of a better way to think of it, a helplessness in which we approach because it's like, oh, I'm just helpless in this because it's just easier for somebody else to take care of that for me rather than, wait a second, how do I move from helplessness that's by default to actually I'm looking for help? Mm-hmm. And that's a different way to orient towards it in my mind. Do you guys see that different?
No, at least for me, I don't know about Bill, but for me, as I sit here, that's a very poignant, idea. And even when you're talking about I need help versus helplessness, there's a part of that intimacy that comes into play where if you are acknowledging that maybe you are helpless in a particular situation, I'm not going to deny the fact that you can be helpless because that's just your situation.
Yeah.
When you communicate those things, that becomes a kind of step into that intimate moment. It's okay, I'm acknowledging my shortcomings. I'm acknowledging what's happening with me, for me, to me. I'm also acknowledging that if I'm going to say this out loud, it's going to give that other person now something to, like you said, hold over me, or have something about me that now, where is that struggle? Where's that dynamic going to go? And having an open dialogue and conversation around that is imperative. And when you talked about opening those doors of communication and setting some of those boundaries, and those boundaries get brushed up against, you better have a really clear understanding as to, here's what I said, and here's what I mean, and here's the consequences, good or bad, of what those boundaries are going to mean.
Well, you see,
I appreciate that.
But you see, I think one of the things, Jonathan, that we get into this helpless and helpful dichotomy, it's really, we're not helpless. Even if we are have a disability, that's the myth that people are giving us, that we're helpless.
Absolutely.
What we have to define is, what help do we need and what help do we not need?
Right.
You do not have to cannot take control of me. I have to tell you what I need, and by that, I'm gaining control.
Yeah. Yeah. That's well said, Bill, because I think there's this element, because to me, as I'm hearing this dialogue go on with you fellas right now, is this is just human.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in some ways, right? Because I think all of us, those that have obvious disabilities, those that have disabilities that aren't as obvious, but they truly are still disabilities for them, even to just those in the other realms of the population, I think we all are capable and face this in aspects and characteristics of our life to realize the importance of, there is a dramatic difference between asking and seeking help versus hoping somebody will fill in a gap, or allowing somebody unasked and uninvited to fill in a gap.
Exactly. Yeah,
because one of the beautiful things I love as a definition of relationships, particularly marriage, is it takes me places I can't go on my own.
Absolutely.
There you go. That's an interesting way to put it.
I mean, I'm capable of doing a lot on my own.
Yeah.
But when I have a relationship, I can go places further.
Absolutely.
And when I have a marriage and an intimate connection with people, I can go further than I can on my own. And I think there's a beauty to that that only plays out all the more profoundly in the disabled population, I would think.
And what you're talking about is that I have the security to go places that I might be afraid to go alone, because I'm going with someone that I trust.
Yep.
So I can take some risk, and that's the ideal situation, particularly in a committed relationship where both of you are going to protect each other. And see, the other thing is that until people with disabilities understand that they contribute something to a relationship, then it isn't one way.
Right.
That's where we run into trouble, I think, in a relationship, when we see it as one way. That person is taking care of me, and I can't do anything.
Right.
Well, now you're running into these dependent, codependent relationships that, you know, are intimacy suckers versus, you know, life givers.
That's right.
You know, I come into these, you know, relationships, and I have never been one to go to a movie by myself. I'm 40 years old and I have yet to go to a movie by myself because I'm an experience person. I want to enjoy an experience, whether it be a trip, a movie, dinners, things with people, and just to grow that intimate relationship, regardless of with, you know, whoever it is. Maybe it's because I have a fear of missing out, or I don't want to be by myself. That's a whole other conversation for another time.
We're not going there in this conversation.
Not yet. But what's beautiful to me is that it's this iron sharpens iron thing that you're both rubbing up against each other. You're hitting each other's pain points. You're growing with each other, for each other in some cases. And when we're trying to build and cultivate intimacy into these lifelong relationships, hopefully, how do we start building this intimate relationship, even if it's new or we're trying to rebuild what was there? What are some steps that we can take in moving that forward?
Well, so this is one of those interesting questions here, Jonathan, because I think most people got it backwards on how we actually do this. That I hope that my spouse or my partner or a friend or a caregiver or a family member, whatever role it could be, because I think it plays out in every single dynamic of relationship roles that we have.
Yeah.
That I hope that they will lead me there. That's backwards. Yeah. I set the depth of the intimacy I want by having the courage to take the risk to do so.
Absolutely.
That is just the way it goes.
I should do something rather than the other person do it.
Well, oh, I mean, I think of it the way I picture this with clients is I'll see them kind of dancing around this idea. And I use the metaphor of, okay, so what I'm seeing is you guys both say it's a nice hot summer day and you want to go swimming. So you're sitting on the side of the pool and each of you got your legs dangling in the water. And you're like, I want to go swimming, but I'm not getting in until you go first.
Right.
Rather than, you know what? I want to swim. I'm cannonballing into that sucker.
Heck
and I hope you'll join me.
Yeah. Then that's a toughie.
It is because I might wind up, you know, going to a movie alone, heaven forbid there, Jonathan.
That's right. I know. But then I have nobody to talk about it with. I'm not going to go keyboard warrior and just sit behind my keyboard.
But it's just that element of that's what keeps us from taking that risk on top of the fact that it hurts if it is rejected, if it's hurt, if it's not responded to and applauded and welcomed. And why would I invite more hurt into my life? And then here's the other equation to this, though. If I'm sitting on the side of the pool wanting to swim, I'm already hurting.
Yep. That's right.
So why don't I turn towards that fear, turn towards that anxiety or that possible disappointment and face it head on? Man, life is so much better when I turn towards my disability and face it head on.
That's right.
And
go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying, as a person with a disability, I can use that as an excuse for not doing something. And it is an excuse. I know that if I get off my duff, I can do something. But, I might not be able to hear, or I'll be in a situation I can't handle. That is BS that I feed myself. Yeah. And end up not doing something exactly as you're saying, rather waiting for somebody else to go with me. And I know that I do it, and I know other people do it, and yet we are perfectly capable if we say, I'm willing to take a risk.
Yeah. Well said.
So let's say you have, I want to go two ways with this first. The first way. When you're trying to have intimacy with self and you're in these positions where you don't feel comfortable with yourself, what are some practical tips that somebody could do either today or in this week that may get them engaged with themselves enough to be able to say, we're just going to use me for example, go to a movie by myself.
Okay. That's a good example because it's a little more safe in some ways because it's almost funny to think about, but it is a real deal still.
Right.
The fear associated with that is still absolutely real.
Getting
more comfortable with discomfort is one of the ideas.
That's a dangerous topic.
is realize life is uncomfortable. That there are aspects of it that I have to just embrace the discomfort because that's where I grow. The other thing I think that's important is just to look at this through the lens of brain science, that a lot of times our fears are embedded deeper into the core parts of our brain, like the amygdala area where there's emotional memories are stored, but there's no timestamp associated with it. It's from something in the past that, but I still have that fear. I just can't put it to bed because it just feels real. Whenever it's touched upon. And so if you had, to use your example, Jonathan, if this weekend, as we're recording this, you're like, you know what, Friday night, I got no plans. I'm going to go to a movie. And you know what? This is a chance to do it solo. And if you actually say that out loud to yourself, a different part of your brain hears that. Right? It's the prefrontal cortex area where the auditory comes in on the side. And so now that part of your brain is looking on the other part of your brain. And that helps try to build a, and I view it as it tries to pull that sucker out from the depth and help make sense of it a little more to realize, well, what am I really afraid of? Okay, well, what I really am afraid of is I won't have somebody to talk to about that. Well, that could be remedied by after the movie, hop on the text chains of the friends I've got. Hey, has anybody seen this and you want to meet for coffee? And now all of a sudden you got a chance to connect and get that thing met when it really wasn't about being solo in a dark theater by myself.
And we develop the confidence then in ourselves to be able to also be confident in an intimate relationship. Where there is a possibility of power play, but if we're confident in ourselves, this is what I'm hearing, power play may be there, but it, we can deal with it. And the other person can become aware, I don't have the kind of power that, or do I need to have that kind of power?
And this is that idea of autonomy's power is huge in the sense of, wait, hold on a second. I can still have a voice here. I still have sway here, right? I still matter here. And how I conduct myself in that way teaches other people how to treat me.
And that's so crucial.
And those intimate moments become more intimate when people are respectfully loving those boundaries. And then even when you have those respectful boundaries and they're being pushed up against, if you both have the relationship, whether it be friendship, parental, spousal, caregiver support, any of those relationships, and you start to grow, that's such a fun place to be, because now you're both feeling safe with each other, yourself. You have confidence in yourself, and you allow yourself to say, look, I'm going to come to you in a moment of humility, and I'm going to humble an idea or a thought to you. What is your opinion? I'm struggling with this, struggling with X, Y, and Z. And now you're, you know, to use the boxing analogy, now you're in the same corner versus pitted against each other in this ultimate kind of power struggle.
And there's interesting thing that's got to be added here, at least the way I hear this, Jonathan, is optimally speaking, people will respectfully honor my boundaries. Generally speaking, among human beings, we don't do that.
No, we don't.
So what matters then is I respectfully enforce my boundaries. Because that's what teaches people differently how to treat me and interact with me and how long they can stay alongside me. Because if I don't enforce a boundary and I'm just all offended that they didn't honor it, well, of course not, because your boundary impeded them. And what they want. And so people want what they want, and it's up to me to teach them, you don't get that with me. You don't, you don't, or you do, but it's just this idea of I think far too often we think other people should play by our rules, and they just don't, because they're playing by theirs. Dude, and it's not, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that at face value.
Yeah.
But I have to regularly, I love the phrase, I've said it a couple of times already, I have to teach people how to treat me.
Yeah,
and that's not just with my words. Yep. That's also what I do. You know, if you're speaking disrespectfully on the phone, I may say one thing of like, I'm not going to sit here and listen to you guys. You're just being disrespectful to me. Right, and they continue to, I'm like, okay. And I just hang up.
Right. But you see, it's a matter of our knowing that we mm-hmm. have a right to have boundaries. And that's what often, and that is okay. And
absolutely.
We're not rejecting someone. We're actually just establishing a way that the two of us can, in a healthy way, come together.
Right, because I'm actually offering up a manner in which we can get closer to each other. Because boundaries help us get closer to each other than not having them.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah.
I know you've talked about it a few times on your show, and I've heard other therapists say this. But when it comes to the men and women dynamic, women have so little respect for a man that has no backbone and who's not going to show up. And when you show up for yourself and you show out, people tend to want to be around you. Mm-hmm. And I love that aspect mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. when you're showing up for yourself, you no longer feel like you have to have others pouring into you because mm-hmm. you can show up for yourself. And a lot of times in the blind, low vision community, in the disabled community, we are waiting for people to pour into us to give us the quote unquote permission to go be or do whatever it is that we want to do.
Right.
And oftentimes we, like Bill, you said at the beginning, we get in our own way and we want to get off our duff. We want to go do something, but we don't, because we're either afraid, we don't have the people in our corner, we've never had that, and we always want that.
Right.
But kind of as we're starting to wrap this up, Dr. Allen, what would you like to leave people with when they're discovering intimacy in and of itself?
Probably the best thing to think of is how it is in some ways, a learned thing that we can do. That every single one of us are intimately challenged in some way, shape, or form.
Nice term.
because it's hard to really get close to somebody and then settle down.
Yeah.
Right? I want them to help me feel better about the fact that I'm close to them rather than just settle myself down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so self-awareness is key. In that regard, like Jonathan, you were describing of, if I'm afraid to do something, what do I need to do? Well, I need to just be more aware of, why am I afraid? Drill down. Don't just let it be, I'm afraid. Okay.
Yeah.
Drill into the specifics. What is it I'm afraid of? Right.
Yeah.
What is it I'm afraid of? What is the bigger fear? What's the deeper thing in there that it could be? And then bring that forward, because what you might actually find is a collaboration that you could have with those around you.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is the stepping stone to a far deeper relationship than I could ever have. And it also is a stepping stone towards going places I've never gone in my life.
Right.
Because I truly have a collaborative partner or partners.
Absolutely.
Because again, I think this is in variety of levels, not just in a committed relationship or a marriage, which is my focus largely. But I think with friendships, with coworkers, with support staff and people that you interact with, church family members, everybody, I think we can have collaborative alliances if I do my part. And then I see who's willing to go deep, who's not. Because if they're not, why am I wasting a whole lot of time?
Right. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Allen, how do people, if they want to find out more about you, about your global mission, because it's amazing what you guys are doing. Your beautiful wife, Pam, is on your show, and you guys just do a killer job. So how do people find out more about you?
Well, so if you just Google "sexy marriage radio," is one of the easy ways. It'll be one of the, it'll be the first thing that comes up on any of the social network platforms. It's "Sexy Marriage Radio" altogether. SMR.fm is our website, and it's just the only website I have. So everything is there.
Nice.
The show's on all the major platforms. We're doing a whole lot more focus towards YouTube right now. And then once we get into the new house and I can actually build a proper studio.
There you go. Let's go.
We'll do even more, hopefully, on the YouTube world and the video world. But yeah, smr.fm. I'm very easy to find and often am very, very quick in responding. I try to be very responsive with everybody.
Great. Awesome. Great.
Well, thank you.
Well, you've been a wonderful guest.
And well, this has been fun. I appreciate the mission you guys have. I'm just now cluing into it, and it is. I can see how great a mission this is.
It's eye-opening, some would say.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I get a little naked when I, put myself out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he considers himself a producer, and because I don't like to go, like we were talking, I don't like to do this alone. I have to have somebody to bounce off of. It works out.
Understandable.
Well, thank you very much for being on this program, and we thank our audience for listening in. Remember, if you have any feedback, we have the feedback line, which is 720-712-8856, or you can email us feedback@aftersight.org, and we look forward to being with you again in our next episode. Thank you, and thank you, Dr. Allen.
Thank you, guys.